Hello, everybody, and welcome in to another special podcast right here on Sports Talk Chicago. My name's John Zaglul, and on today's show, we're welcoming in a very special guest to talk about a wide range of sports topics, including NCAA March Madness, Cubs and Sox baseball, plus the MLB Hall of Fame. I'm truly looking forward to today's interview as we have lots of interesting topics to talk about, but before we get started, make sure to follow us on Twitter at ChiTalkSports and hit me up personally on Google+, LinkedIn, and Instagram at John Zags, on Twitter at John Z Sports, and now on Facebook at John Zaglul. Today's show is brought to you by Moochie World, where inspiration meets creation. Call 708-247-2100 to book parties, paint your own pottery, and have art classes for adults and children. Moochie World, creativity at its finest. And by the Windy City Thunderbolts. Celebrate the team's 20th anniversary season by purchasing tickets today. Call 708-489-2255 for your chance to be a part of history this summer in Crestwood. Well, I'm truly looking forward to today's podcast and today's interview coming up in a moment because our guest is not only an integral part of the Chicago sports media scene, but also he's quite knowledgeable on a number of different sports topics. I mean, this is someone who has covered college football, college basketball, golf, and Major League Baseball, both locally and nationally. So with that in mind, there's lots that we're going to be talking about today, including some bracket busters in March Madness, his thoughts on Duke and their handling of Zion Williamson, plus his Hall of Fame ballot, who he voted for and why. We'll also get to his thoughts on Ichiro and his retirement from the game, plus his amazing sports journalism career. At this time, I'd like to thank you for your continued support of this podcast, and I hope you enjoy what's to come. It's now time for our special guest. He began his sports media career in 1990, writing for the Daily Northwestern and graduating from the Medill School of Journalism. Following his time in Northwestern, he became a staff writer for Sports Illustrated, and by 1996, he was hired to cover Notre Dame football for the Chicago Tribune. After 2 years on the beat, he transitioned to baseball, covering both the Cubs and White Sox. Today, he continues in his tenure with the Tribune as a columnist and serves as a member of the Baseball Writers Association of America. Please welcome Teddy Greenstein to the show. Teddy, how are you doing today? And thank you for being here on the show.
John, I'm outstanding, and it's truly my pleasure.
Well, to start today, Teddy, I'm compelled to ask, how's your bracket looking right now? I mean, with the Marquette loss and Minnesota also moving on, I'm sure things haven't gone according to plan. What are your thoughts on those two games specifically, and are there other possible upsets that you're keeping your eye on for this weekend?
Yeah, you know, actually, Murray State Marquette went just as I planned. Man, I got Murray going into the Sweet 16. So that was a joy to watch, seeing Ja Morant and now reading people, you know, reading the comps is kind of fun. We always do that with NBA players even more than guys, you know, from other sports. I'm seeing Latrell Sprewell, and I'm also seeing Derrick Rose. I mean, the kid is so explosive. So that's a fun one. I have a lot of family in South Burlington, Vermont, so I picked Vermont to beat Florida State, so that one didn't go as planned. But to me, when you're filling out a bracket in the first round, you pick some upsets. You go with your heart. And, you know, because really these brackets are going to be decided by who wins it in the end. Most of them are basically, you're not going to win unless you pick the champion. So I have Duke, but I think in the early rounds you have some fun. And got my eye on Cal Irvine today. That's certainly a very good team, and I think K-State is vulnerable.
You know, speaking of Ja Morant, just going back to his performance yesterday, he kind of showed off the fact that, hey, if you're one good player, you could be dominant and explosive enough to beat a good team like Marquette. What were your impressions on his performance and also that statement about him being so good and one player kind of taking over a game and winning something in the tournament?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen that in some games. I mean, you know, obviously Ja had a triple-double, and it made guys think about great performances in the past. And one of the ones that came up was Dwayne Wade, who I think went for 29-11-11 for Marquette, and that vaulted him into the, I think, top five of the draft that year. Now, Morant was probably already going to be two or three, depending on R.J. Barrett, But I think now that performance yesterday might have solidified him as the number two, as long as he plays decently the rest of the way. Just an amazing playmaker, point guard, sets up his teammates beautifully. And that's the thing. Obviously, all these are team games. You know, you can't be out there with a bunch of clowns, or else Murray wouldn't have made the tournament to begin with. But when Ja Morant gets to the rim and he's got three guys around him and he can flip a pass to an open three-point shooter in the corner, that's so valuable. And that's what he's going to be asked to do in the NBA next year.
Teddy Greenstein here on Sports Talk Chicago. And Teddy, moving to Duke basketball and their stake in the tournament, some people are concerned about the handling of Zion Williamson after his injury. I mean, there were thoughts about sitting him the rest of the year in order to improve his draft stock, but now, of course, he's back with the team. Are you at all concerned about the way he's been treated in relation to Duke's chances in the tournament?
Oh, John, not at all. I think he's been treated great. Now, I actually got to Duke when they played Boston College a couple months ago. It's funny. I was already going to go this year because I'm friends with the parents of a player named Brennan Besser. So before I'd ever heard of Zion Williamson, there was a plan in the works for me to get to a game. Then, as it turns out, you know, the Bulls are going to be a bottom four team, and Duke's got Zion and RJ Barrett. So I said, all right, I definitely got to go, man. I got to write about this dude. I got to see him in college. He handles everything so incredibly well. I mean, I asked him at that point, you know, before his knee injury, hey, is there any thought to sitting out? Because Scottie Pippen had said that he was maybe going to do that. And Zion replied, no chance, man. He loves his teammates too much. And it's like, basketball players play basketball. We can't be all obsessed with, you know, sitting out and worrying about injuries. I mean, I would really question a guy who's that concerned, who would do that to protect his draft status. He's at Duke. He gets to play at Cameron Indoor, which is an absolute thrill. You gotta make sure you get there before too long. And what's better than being a college basketball player in the NCAA tournament, man? This is what you live for. You don't live to sit out and, you know, and make a bunch of money. He'll make a bunch of money either way. He doesn't have to worry about it. So I'm glad that he dismissed that notion.
So with Williamson back, you mentioned earlier that you picked Duke to win it all. Can you explain why that is? And also, what's your matchup in the championship game?
Yeah, so my final four, I went with two ones, a two, and a five. I got Duke, Virginia, Michigan, and I went with Auburn, even though I knew Auburn could absolutely lose that first round game. And has a very tough one tomorrow with Kansas. So the thing with Auburn is I'm old friends with Bruce Pearl way back when. You know, before I got to the Tribune, I was working at Sports Illustrated, and I did a story on Bruce Pearl when he was at Southern Indiana, and we've maintained a friendship ever since. I love messing with Illinois fans when I tell them I'm friends with Bruce Pearl. I think that's always great. They think about Deion Thomas and that whole scandal. So that's a bit of a sentimental pick. Especially in that bracket, man, that's a tough bracket. That's a bracket with Kansas, North Carolina, and Kentucky. So whoever gets out of there will have accomplished something. You know, Virginia's just so solid and obviously incredibly motivated from last year. They might end up facing Tennessee in the Elite Eight. Michigan might take on Gonzaga. Gonzaga just completely dominated Fairleigh Dickinson. And Duke, Michigan State, hopefully that's the Elite Eight game. It shouldn't have been that. Michigan State deserved better. For some reason, the committee favored geography over logic. Michigan State shouldn't have had to play the top overall seed in the tournament, potentially in the Elite Eight, but that's where they are.
Well, I wanted to shift to some MLB news, and yesterday, during the opening series in Japan, Ichiro Suzuki announced his retirement from the game after a Hall of Fame-worthy 18-year career. Obviously, this was expected with him being relegated to a front office role last season, but what are your thoughts on Ichiro retiring? And what does he mean to the game of baseball?
Ichiro is one of a kind. You know, it's interesting. When MLB teams sign Japanese players, you just never know. I mean, they could be superstars, or they could just fade away, or they could be somewhere in between, like, you know, Hideki Irabu. We've seen the full variety, but nobody's like Ichiro. Nobody's a guy who would go up there left-handed, who – it's almost like he was playing fast pitch softball. I mean, he was running to first base like as he was swinging. He was incredible with getting on base, you know, basically beating out ground balls all over the infield. an amazing defensive player. I mean, a cannon in right field, even more impressive considering it looks like he weighs about 140 pounds. So a total groundbreaking type of guy, and a guy who's obsessed with baseball. There's a great story in ESPN, the magazine, last year about that. A guy who's so regimented and so obsessed. So amazing set of circumstances. Love the fact that he was able to retire again, sort of again, as a player in Japan. That was a beautiful tribute.
So being a Hall of Fame voter, and I think this goes without question, will you be voting for Ichiro when he becomes eligible in 2025? And secondly, where does he rank to you among some of the greatest outfielders of all time?
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely top five, if not top 10. I favor overall players. Like, to me, the guys who just hit well, I'm not as huge a fan of those. Like, I like guys who play defense, who ran the base as well. That's part of why I vote for Omar Vizquel. He didn't get a ton of support. He's viewed as a borderline Hall of Famer at best because obviously his bat was not exactly electric, but these are the guys who I look at. I also voted for Larry Walker. He's a guy who, five-tool player. Don Baylor once told me he's a six-tool player because he's such an intelligent guy. So I really do like the well-rounded guys, and I'm less likely to vote for the DHs. That said, after some years of not voting for Edgar Martinez, I did vote for him in part because Harold Baines got in, and Edgar Martinez was a much better hitter than Harold Baines.
So, yeah, speaking of your Hall of Fame vote as you got to it, I have one question about Larry Walker and also about your ballot. So, first of all, with Larry Walker, he's a guy who's only played in 150-plus games once in his entire career. He doesn't have any milestones specifically. Does that worry you as a voter?
Not so much, John. You know, I look at it more, the question that I ask myself when I'm evaluating players is this: was he great? So I don't want very good. I don't want longevity. I'm not into, you know, Harold Baines being around for X number of years and accumulating a bunch of hits. I mean, there are a lot of very good players. Don Baylor, Mark Grace. I mean, there are a ton of guys who compile great, really good stats. But I look for greatness, and I'm not so concerned with longevity. My favorite player growing up all time is Don Mattingly. You know, I grew up in New York in the 80s pretty much, and I voted for Don Mattingly every year, and that's kind of a sentimental pick. Obviously, I know he's not going to get in, but I always say if you have a Hall of Fame vote and don't vote for your favorite all-time player, what's the point? But it's consistent with how I feel about, look, it's really not his fault that his back gave out. When he was whole, he was amazing. Larry Walker suffered a lot of injuries too, and when he was healthy, he was one of the best guys out there.
And secondly, about your ballot, I noticed you did not vote for any steroid players. Now, some argue that guys like Bonds and Clemens should get in because their numbers before the steroids were Hall of Fame worthy. So what are your thoughts on Bonds and Clemens and their candidacy for the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, I'm really not a hardliner on that. Like, I did vote for Mike Piazza and Jeff Bagwell, who've been suspected, but, you know, certainly never caught, no proof. And I really do respect the people who analyze Bonds and Clemens and say they were a product of their time. You know, the pitchers that Bonds was facing were doing juice. The hitters that Clemens was facing were taking stuff. I understand that. I just really choose not to. I had some personal dealings with Bonds. I really despise the guy. I think he sucked a lot of oxygen out of that Giants clubhouse. I think you know, they didn't win much with him. And I think he's a reason why. He had a really kind of poisonous effect in there. It was Barry Bonds and then the 24 other players. Clemens, tough one. You know, I think he was less accomplished before sort of part two of his career, the post-chemistry part of his career. So I do not vote for those guys, but I have no issue with people who do.
Would you be voting for guys like A-Rod and David Ortiz when they become eligible in the early 2020s?
Tough. Ortiz, I would lean to yes because of overall contributions to his team. You know, to think about what he did for a Red Sox franchise that hadn't won and the joy he brought to Boston is incredibly significant. So when I'm weighing all this, you know, being a guy who's not 100% you know, opposed. I'm certainly open to steroid guys. You know, how long were they taking it? I mean, do they Are they apologetic? Do they admit it? I mean, I sort of factor all these things in and look at the overall contributions of the player, and Ortiz's contributions were spectacular.
I wanted to now go to today's game and opening day, just under a week away. The Cubs and Sox right now, there are two teams heading in different directions. The Cubs right now, they're looking to improve upon last season's disappointing finish, despite a last-place Pecota projection, while the Sox, after losing out on the Manny Machado sweepstakes, are continuing their rebuild. What are you expecting from both the Cubs and Sox here in 2019?
Yeah, it's interesting, man. The Cubs, it seems like they enter the season without a ton of momentum. I mean, there are questions about Joe Maddon. Is he going to be here? There's definitely this vibe that management is looking for a reason to terminate him after the season, or just, you know, not renew his contract. And I think that'd be an incredible shame. I mean, Joe's not perfect. He did not. He made some obviously questionable moves in the World Series, but last year, man, he did a spectacular job, especially considering the Cubs basically, you know, couldn't hit. And a lot of guys like Wilson Contreras and Chris Bryant were having down years at the plate. He handled the bullpen beautifully, and he's just a great ambassador for the team. So I'm definitely hoping the Cubs do well, if for no other reason than I want Joe to be here much longer. You know, the White Sox, exciting news with Eloy, and that's good because that whole storyline has been just trampled on. That whole, you know, he's got to wait until late April because of the service time issue. So I'm glad they worked out that deal, and we'll see if Eloy hits it well enough and over the rest of spring training to break the club. Beyond that, it's going to be another tough year on the South side. I mean, they still just don't have enough good players, enough good pitchers. Let's see how this year progresses. I'm really curious to see about Dylan Cease. He's, as you know, powerful right-hander who just dominated in the minors last year, and he'll be one step away to start the season in Charlotte. And then I want to see when does Nick Madrigal come? You know, he's a second base prospect, and Zach Collins, a catcher who I just wrote about. So it's an interesting year. We'll see, you know, who's just sort of passing through, and then which guys are going to be here for the rebuild. You know, guys like Tim Anderson, they need improvement from him, and Yoan Moncada, and certainly several pitchers, including Ronaldo Lopez.
Going back to what you said about Eloy and his contract, are you at all concerned about the White Sox offer to lock him up long term? Because in reality, he's never played a game in the major leagues, and you're taking a risk by signing him long term. So what are your thoughts on that deal by the White Sox and Jimenez?
Yeah, I mean, I think both sides are taking a risk. Eloy's side, they're saying, all right, man, give me some security. So right now, Eloy has basically generational wealth, so he's all set if something happens to him tomorrow. White Sox get the advantage of an extra year of control and, you know, cost certainty in its budget, which certainly can be a valuable thing. I mean, I was covering the White Sox way back when, and every year management would be going to war with Mark Burley over how much to pay him. As you know, in those first 3 years, teams just renew players basically at any salary they see fit. So if you can work it out with Eloy, if you can give your fans something to be happy about, if you can have them up in early April, maybe sell some tickets and have the knowledge that he's going to be, you know, with you for an extra year of control, I think there's some value there.
Now, shifting to your personal career, I alluded to some of your journey in the introduction earlier, but take me through the steps in your sports media career. How have you become such a respected figure in the sports world today?
Well, that's very sweet of you to say that, man. I mean, I think all of us at the Tribune, we feel like we're hanging on for dear life. The staff was obviously much bigger 10, 15 years ago, and it mirrors what's gone on at other newspapers. It's obviously, it's a tough industry, and those of us who have, you know, who still have jobs really appreciate and enjoy them, because we know there are dozens, if not hundreds, of really good sports writers out there who, do not have full-time work. So we definitely appreciate what we have. But, you know, my path was pretty direct. I mean, even just like straight from high school, man, my sister was the editor of the high school paper. So I started working for her, went to Medill, as you mentioned, Northwestern Journalism School. My first day of freshman year, started writing for the Daily. The Daily was a huge priority for me in college. Definitely cared way more about that than my classes. You know, I felt like, all right, if I just kind of coasted, took some easy classes at Northwestern and got some B's, but I wanted to absolutely kill it at the Daily. And I think that was a wise move. So I ended up interning at some places, Lexington Herald Leader, Cincinnati Inquirer. After I graduated, New York Daily News, hometown paper. Sports Illustrated for about a year and a half. I got to go to the 95 Rose Bowl as Rick Riley's reporter when I was at Sports Illustrated. So that was beyond thrilling. That was a hell of a week. And then the Tribune called me in 1996. They said, hey, we got an opening to cover Notre Dame. Do you want in? And I was 23 years old. So if you get an offer to cover a college football program like Notre Dame for a paper like the Chicago Tribune, you do it. And that's been the last job I've applied for, man. I've been at the Tribune since 96. So, we hope newspapers continue to thrive because obviously people are more hungry for information than ever.
Are you worried about the direction of newspapers and print-based media with the rising of the internet? And how do you combat something like that as a columnist and journalist yourself?
Yeah, John, there's no doubt, man. You're always evolving in this job. I get an email from my editor this morning. Hey, do you want to chime in on Tom Izzo? Because some people out there are saying, oh, Izzo was too harsh on Aaron Henry, his freshman forward yesterday. So you do it, and then you use what you have. Like I was covering the Big Ten basketball tournament at the United Center last week. I've known Izzo for a while. I've played golf with him, and you kind of use that knowledge of what you have to try to turn over a quick column because, look, it is largely about getting page views these days. It is less about print subscribers and trying to get online subscribers, trying to make people realize that they should spend some of their hard-earned money to subscribe to the Tribune. We think it's still a really good product. There's a lot of good stuff we do, and hopefully people view it like they do, you know, Netflix or wherever they buy songs and realize, man, content can't be for free or else none of us are going to have jobs. So you got to adjust, man. Sometimes they want us to shoot videos. You do it. Sometimes they want longer stories, shorter stories, quick stories. You have to have the attitude of saying yes. There are occasional things you can say no to, but don't say no unless you got a really good reason.
And before we let you go today, Teddy, what's been the most memorable moment in your career thus far?
You know, the first one that comes to mind is that Rose Bowl week. I was really young. I mean, I'm what, like 23. I'm on Sports Illustrated's company dime out in Pasadena for the week. Got a girlfriend out there. It was just one of those, like, super fun times. I remember you might be too young to know the actor Charlton Heston, but at that point he was pretty famous. And, like, I kept running into him. I saw him so many times that week that by the end I was joking. It's like, hey, Chuck, how are you? So it was just one of those amazing times. But, you know, that and my favorite assignment every year is the Masters. And for those people listening out there, I always tell them, if you get any chance to go to the Masters, if somebody invites you, do not say no. It is even better than it looks on TV. It's the best experience. And I cherish that every year. I get out there on Monday, I look up and I say, this is the greatest freaking place on earth. So I love covering college football, college hoops, the Masters. I get to go to a lot of good things, man. And also being a walking distance to Wrigley Field ain't exactly too bad.
Well, Teddy, thank you so much for being here on the show. It was a pleasure and hope to have you on again soon.
Loved it, John. My pleasure, buddy.
What an honor it was to have Teddy Greenstein on today's show as we talk with him about some Cubs and White Sox news, NCAA March Madness, and his Baseball Hall of Fame vote. As I alluded to earlier in the show, Teddy is such a respected member of the media, and as you heard from his answers, very charismatic yet knowledgeable, so I truly appreciate him taking the time to come on the podcast here today. Well, that does it for us here at Sports Talk Chicago. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at ChiTalkSports and hit me up personally on Google+, LinkedIn, and Instagram at John Zags, on Twitter at John Z Sports, and now on Facebook at John Zagluel. Also, make sure to subscribe to the website. You can find the subscription box on the homepage of the site. Simply type in your email, click yes on the confirmation email, and from there, you'll be subscribed. You'll receive every new podcast and article directly to your email. And remember, Sports Talk Chicago is now on iTunes and Google Play. Simply search Sports Talk Chicago and every podcast from the 2018-19 calendar year is now available. Feel free to leave us a 5-star rating and or write a review. Your support is greatly appreciated. And finally, if you enjoyed today's podcast, make sure to check out my new radio show, every Monday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. on 88.5 WHBK-FM Chicago. You'll still hear my same hard-hitting Chicago sports opinions. Plus, we'll cover national sports issues, introduce special segments, and of course, welcome special guests on every show. Again, that's every Monday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. on 88.5 WHBK-FM Chicago. Thank you again for listening to today's show, and have a great day.